Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. I'm Ari Shaffir. Today, I am going to play an old episode of the Skeptic Tank. This comes from when I was still on the old feed that I used to be on, and I think because of that, a lot of people haven't heard this episode. This is episode 22. This is an interview I did with my father about his experience in the Holocaust. I thought today, being Yom HaShoah, which is also known as Holocaust Memorial Day, I thought it would be an apt time to play it. His is just one story out of millions and millions of stories from the Holocaust. If you want more, I also have episode 45, which is a couple, Willie and Helen Luxembourg, who met in a concentration camp. But ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 22, The Holocaust, with my father, Nat Shaffir.
Okay.
All right. So, hello. This is Ari Shaffir. Welcome to Skeptic Tank number. I always forget. 22 or something. So, let me do those two so it's safe. I'm here with my father, Nochum ben Asher Anshel. What's your name, Hebrew?
Nochum ben Asher Anshel.
That's what it is.
Nachum, right? That's it. They call me Nathan.
Yeah. Okay. And then. All right, so you were. I want to talk to you a little about, because I never really talked to you about it, about the time in the Second World War and the Holocaust and stuff.
Okay.
So when were you born?
I was born in December 26, 1936.
December 26, 1936.
The war broke out. Well, actually, the Nazis occupied Romania pretty much late in the war, and they occupied in 1933.
1943. 1943.
Okay.
Right. So you were 7 when they occupied.
Exactly. Right. And then, although before the Nazis came into occupied, yeah. the Romanian regime was pretty bad too.
Yeah, a lot of countries sort of sided with the Nazis before they ever really came over, right?
Exactly. And the man that actually ran Romania, which was a big anti-Semite, his name was Ian Antonescu.
Okay.
And his Iron Guard. I mean, he had a grip of everything that's going on in his country, and he pretty much depressed a lot of the Jewish people.
Oppressed them just by what?
By keeping them, taking away things from them, not giving them opportunities.
Was there like major segregation back then? Like, could you just say we don't hire Jews? Could that be a sign?
No, I don't think there was segregation, but obviously people did not mingle. Non-Jewish people did not mingle with Jewish people.
Okay.
So things, you know, were harder for Jewish people to do certain things, but the Jewish people usually were tailors and there were different tradesmen,
yeah.
And they kind of stuck to themselves to some point, but they also were dealing with the non-Jewish people.
What do you mean dealing with them?
Business-wise.
Okay.
Yeah, in other words, they were buying and trading with them. My father had a big farm, so he traded for hay or for cattle feed.
So it'd be like if somebody owned a Jew owned a movie theater, people would go to the movie theater that Jews owned, but they just wouldn't talk to the Jews
exactly.
Afterwards and before.
Put him very close. To
okay, that. So your dad owned what?
He and his brothers lived originally. They lived in Transylvania, which was part of Hungary.
Yeah.
In 1918, was converted. Was taken over by the Romanian government. So
that area just kept going back and forth?
Exactly, yeah. Transylvania was part of Hungary, part of Romania. It's back and forth. So then he and his two brothers lived in Transylvania, and they came to a small town in actually Romania itself, yeah. Which was called Buchum. It's a small town, and they own a dairy farm. And they
in Buchum, Romania?
Buchum, Romania, right. It's yeah. A very small town, not far from the big city. The name of the big city was Iași. Or I-A-S-I, Yasi, but yes. Yash.
Okay.
So that's, and he was dealing
How
with...
How big was a town like that?
The Buchum?
Or Yasi.
Yas was probably maybe 4,000 or 5,000 Jewish people lived in there. It was okay. A big town, but mostly
non-Jewish
people.
Okay, right? It's like 100,000 people total or something?
Possibly. I don't know the exact number, but it was a big city.
Okay.
It's not as big as Bucharest, which was the main city of Romania, which was the capital of Romania.
But still?
It still is, right.
Bucharest and Budapest is a different...
Budapest is in Hungary. Budapest is the main city of Hungary. So Bucharest... excuse me. So it's not as big as Bucharest was, but nonetheless, it was one of the biggest cities in Romania.
Okay. So your dad owned a dairy farm there.
Right. And then in 1942, Ion Antonescu and the guard confiscated.
Ion Antonescu was the
leader of Romania at that point.
Okay.
He was a very right winger. He was very anti-Semitic.
Was he related to Ceausescu?
Ceausescu was later, after the war.
So what did he do? He confiscated
my father's property.
Just came in and confiscated.
Just you don't know it anymore. They took it away.
This was what year?
In 1942.
Okay.
So my father.
This is the war was pretty much raging right now.
It's starting in different parts of Europe.
Okay.
But we didn't hear much about it. We knew that's a war going on, but we really didn't feel it in Romania itself. We lived in Bucharest.
Could you get news back then? How would you hear?
Somehow people were traveling by train, obviously, from town to town, doing business with one town to another, and people were talking about
it. So they relay news, like, hey, I was in, it's just some guy.
I was last week in some place.
And it's bad.
Exactly. And that's exactly, by the way, later on in 1943, 44, 45, when people were taken away to Auschwitz from different places like Poland and Hungary, people found out about it. But it was kind of a delayed news.
People found out that people were taken?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you mean people found out? Like relatives or?
Relatives lived in different towns. They said, oh, I heard that such and such town where people were taken away in cattle trucks or trucks and were moved to a different location.
And there's no real way of, like, I remember after 9/11 happened.
Right.
They called Ilana first, you know, let's say the only people you know are safe. But you can call once the phone lines went back on. But back then there was just rumors.
Not rumors, but people were kind of, there was no telephones, but some postal things, maybe postal cards or letters, but people were traveling. They were still allowed to travel. So people would come back, let's assume from a place in Hungary, come back to Romania.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I heard such and such thing happened in such and such town. And if I know you had family there, at this point, most of your family, some of your family are okay, but I don't know what's going to happen later.
And so there's no way to call and say, where are you guys?
No. The only way you can communicate was by mail.
Okay. And that was weeks before you could get word back. Wow.
So getting back to Romania, the property was confiscated and my father and his two brothers moved to the big city, which was Iași.
So, okay, no legal recourse at all? They just confiscated?
No, just confiscated. They had no, there was no legal recourse.
But they were left safe or safe-ish?
Maybe if he had a problem, if they give him problems, they probably would have killed him.
Okay.
But they didn't do anything, so...
I'm trying to compare it to something I can, like, relate to a little bit. It'd be like somebody coming into my apartment and saying, this is all mine now.
Right.
And I would have had to be like, okay, and just walk away.
If you put up a fight, obviously, you would be in trouble.
Okay.
If you didn't put up a fight,
They'll let you leave,
right.
Okay. Wow.
So they let my father and his two brothers and the families leave. At that point, there were three siblings, myself and my two sisters.
Yeah.
And my...
You were the middle one?
I was the middle one.
Yeah.
And my two uncles, actually my father was the youngest of the three brothers. And the other two uncles also, each one had four children. So they all left into Iași, which was the big city.
And where did you live?
We got an apartment or a house in a kind of Jewish neighborhood.
Yeah.
And my father was able, he was dealing with a lot of non-Jewish people, so he had a lot of friends still that liked him.
Okay.
So he was able to buy, for whatever money still have left, he was able to buy some cows and continue his operation, but on a smaller scale.
Like restart?
Restart, but on a smaller scale.
How big was the dairy farm before?
He had about 600 head of cattle.
Wow.
The three brothers. It was a big
That's
operation.
A lot.
Yeah.
Is that where you started growing the pickles?
No, that was later.
That was later?
That was later.
I just made the recipe for the first time with David Taylor. It was great. Okay, so then he started up like a 35.
At 35 cows. But
and was he worried that they just take that away too?
Yes, he did. Wow. He did. But the thing is that what he did, he couldn't he couldn't buy supplies. He couldn't buy feed. He couldn't buy anything. Because the Jewish people were not allowed to buy anything on the open market. So he had to go to the government.
They couldn't make purchases?
They couldn't make only bread and necessities.
Oh.
So what happens is that if he had to buy certain feed for the cattle, he had to go to the government or to the city, town hall, and request a permit. So he was given a permit
to buy
feed, but not for cash, but for trade. And that was bartering, whatever he was producing in milk and butter and creams and cheeses and things like that, he had to pay back to buy more feed.
Yeah.
So whatever was left over, and that was if, let's assume if they bought a certain amount of feed, they paid them off a certain amount in butter or cheeses. Whatever was left over, my father was able to actually sell for cash in the Jewish community.
Okay. And then they could buy it from him.
They could buy it, yes.
Jews could trade among Jews. Or
exactly.
Sell among
That's
Jews,
what people were doing.
Which is not in the open market.
Correctly.
Wow. And these were rules, these were legal rules set up?
These were legal or not legal, but that's what the rules imposed on the Jewish people.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so then he started this farm.
Started this farm, and then in 19, and that went over.
How old were you around then?
I was 80, but actually was 8 years old.
Okay.
So in 1940.
Do you have memories of this?
I had a lot of memories of some of that childhood, extremely vivid memories.
Yeah.
Because it was hardship. And excuse me. And because, you know, good things sometimes you forget. I'm sorry?
If you need some water, you can get some water.
Okay. So good things you can remember. Bad things you can forget to remember. Bad things you always remember.
Really?
So that's what, you know, I remember the bad parts. You know, I remember some good things, but there were very few in between. So So anyway, what happened is that after a while, in 1943, the Germans starting to come closer to Romania. They occupied Czechoslovakia and all the eastern Black part, Hungary, and they were coming into Romania. Although Romania was the last time they occupied.
Did Romania put up a fight at all?
No.
A lot of
countries did not put up a fight with the Germans. So they occupied, and it was the easiest way for the Germans to actually reach the Russian border. Although Hitler made an agreement with Stalin not to attack Russia.
But he went and got surrounded.
Exactly. Yeah. So he went in there. So what happened is that in 1943, maybe I'm jumping things. I don't know.
Okay.
In 1943, my father was taken away to work on the railroad, to put railroad tracks from Romania all the way to Russia, so the trains would be able to supply the troops on the ground. And that's what they did. So from 19.
So he was taken away.
He was taken away. First, before that, all the Jewish people, one day, when the Germans actually came in 43...
This is when they came into Yash.
They came into Yash, right? Okay. And they said, all the Jewish people have to report to the synagogue courtyard.
Okay.
And don't take anything with you.
Just whatever.
All the Jewish people from that area came in to the synagogue yard. And that's from different neighborhoods of the Jewish people. And from that point on, they took all the Jewish people and they put them in a...
How did they get word out? They just put flyers up or what did they do?
First of all, the Germans knew, the Romanians knew where the Jewish people live. So they took the Germans and says, there's a Jewish house here, Jewish house here, Jewish house here. So they knew exactly where
they go door to door?
They went door to door, right.
Wow. when the Germans came in, I don't know, I just imagine it being like they were just marching in unison straight down the street and pretty much saying, this is our town now.
Well, they were bombarding for a little bit, but not much going on. But that one just moved straight through because people didn't fight them back.
Mm-hmm.
There was no resistance. So they marched through.
Waiting for any sort of fight, and
there was none.
Okay. Right. Okay, so then they just said all the Jewish people have to report to this. Was there any chance of like I look very Jewy. I always say that with curly hair and my nose and whatever. But some people don't look as Jewish as that. Could they hide and pretend they're not Jewish, or did everyone just know?
Okay, first of all, while just before they came in, all the Jewish people had to wear yellow stars. Okay. They say Yud on them, which means Jew.
On your arm or your chest?
On your chest.
Okay.
So every Jewish person had to wear a star. If you were caught without a star and they knew you were Jewish, pretty much they would probably kill you or shut your
house. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you had to?
You had to wear. So some people tried to get away with. So what the Germans did at that time, it says, Nemesis, the Hausen runter. Take your pants down. And any child, was any person was circumcised, they knew they were Jewish. Because only Jewish people were circumcised.
No one else did it back then?
No, they didn't, right.
Oh, that was a good mark.
Yeah.
So that was a way to tell.
Taking the Hausen runter.
Nobody else was circumcised?
No. Non-Jewish people were not circumcised.
Okay.
Oh, so they knew right away.
And all the Jews were?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So
they took your father and they had him work building railroads.
Right.
So this is slave labor. There's no pay?
No.
Okay.
First of all, after the Jewish people were put in, I'm jumping maybe from
it's okay, place but to place. Jump, so, if you remember details,
So when we brought to the courtyard, they said from this point on, all the Jewish people from here, we're going to move you to one location. So they moved this to what they called the Sokola. Sokola area was a big Jewish area beforehand.
Uh-huh.
Some non-Jewish people lived there, but there's a lot of houses. So all the people from Yash, from different places, they moved to the Sokola area, and there was kind of like a ghetto, the Sokola ghetto. And
okay, so it wasn't a ghetto, it was just only Jews?
Only Jewish people lived in that
area. And the non-Jews moved out?
But many non-Jewish, but non-Jewish lived, but the Jewish people couldn't move out of that particular area.
It was a ghetto.
It was a ghetto.
I remember reading a book about this, about the ghetto, about, I think in Poland, actually.
The Poland was the Warsaw Ghetto, right?
Yeah, maybe it was the Warsaw Ghetto. Was that the book?
That was the book, right. Yeah. So people could move out. If they had to, we were able to give them, we were given bread. They had to wait in line to get bread every day. So you can only move to the bread line or to the soup line. But otherwise, you had to come back to the ghetto. You couldn't move out of the ghetto.
Oh, so you can come out just to get
supplies. Just to get the bread, right.
They wouldn't bring supplies in?
No, they would not.
So it wasn't totally enclosed?
Wasn't a gate,
wasn't a fence,
was not walled in, was open, but you couldn't move out. They catch you moving out, they will shoot you.
And people, did you ever see anybody or know of anybody that got shot?
Absolutely. We see it on a daily basis. We saw that people shooting, people being shot on a daily basis, trying to either escape to the forest or doing something. But
people try to run away and just get to the forest, just get out of there.
Right. And younger people that had no family, tried to escape.
Yeah. A lot of them were in college, and people said, why didn't people just leave? And I was like, there was no announcement, like, the Holocaust is coming, you have this much time to get out. And even if they did get out, then the Germans took over the country where you get out to.
Exactly.
And so then what are you going to do?
Exactly. So some people, younger people, had no family, did try to run away, and some of them did, and they became partisans and tried to fight, but otherwise people would have family, young children, they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So they try to please figuring that this will pass, and it never did.
What do they do with the bodies after they shot them?
They left them on the street.
Just left them there?
Yeah, and Jewish people would eventually take them and bury them, but otherwise they just leave them on the street.
Were you allowed to take them and bury them?
They'd allow. There was a...
Because there'd be disease Jewish, otherwise everywhere.
There was disease, but the German had a certain amount of people. It says, that it wasn't like a mayor or the council, but it says you're responsible for the daily operations, like burying people.
So they assigned
jobs to other Jewish people to take care.
Yeah, can I pause it? Thank you. So they put was it like a provisional government or something?
It's not a provisional government, but they assigned jobs to run the Jewish ghetto.
Okay, because they needed someone to do it, and the Germans didn't want to.
They didn't want to. They assigned it to the Jewish people.
Just run yourself. Right. You're in charge of whatever, electricity. This guy's in charge of whatever.
Not electricity, but main things, to clean the streets.
Okay.
To make sure everything stays in order. Okay. People don't get out of line. Things like that.
And were those considered collaborators?
No. Some actually... No, they were not. Not these were not considered. Other people were, but later day they were considered collaborators. But these were
appointed
people that they can run the ghetto.
They were just like, Nat, you're in charge of sweeping.
Exactly.
I'll make sure everything's swept. Like, okay, swept. I'll do it. I'll assign people to do it.
Exactly.
And they would give you the brooms or whatever.
That's it. No pay. No no extra favors. No extra bread.
No, nothing. You didn't get anything out of it.
You didn't get anything out of it. But that's what your job it was.
Okay. And so your father's
his father was taken away in November 1944.
Okay.
And he was, and we never saw him until actually, until we were liberated. We were liberated in May 24, 1945, okay, by the Russians. So, but 6 months later, 4 months later, eventually my father came, he looked for us.
Yeah, did you, okay, okay, go ahead.
We never knew where my father was. We thought he was
there.
You have no word to know.
When people are, what's it taken away, that's it for communication.
Exactly.
So, so it's just guessing after that?
We were hoping that we get something back, but from that, from the kind of front line, because that was the front line where the German tried to lay the railroad to be able to get to Russia, was the front line for them. We never heard anything from them.
There was no.
And later on, we found out that 90% of the men that were taken away from the ghetto never came back, never survived.
Wow. Either from 90% mortality rate.
90%, correct. Yeah.
Wow.
So eventually, my father was able to find us. And then there were when the it's called the joint, the Jewish joint came in, and they tied to the, after the liberation, and finally my father finally found his way back to Yash, and then he found us.
So you were waiting for him, or were you just waiting
there? No, we were waiting. We were in this displaced a DP camp,
okay,
and a lot of
displaced
people
person.
Were there. Yeah, and we were hoping that eventually we'll find him, but we're trying to figure out what to do next.
Okay.
Because before that, you know, I was only 7, or at that point maybe 8. I was able to sweep the streets. I was able to work in taking care of the horses of the German horses.
During the occupation,
right? And things that if you were able to do any kind of work, they would keep you. Oh. The young men that were able to work physical work, they took to the front to make sure
they were useful
to the railroad. That was the main goal.
The railroads.
People that couldn't use, elderly people, women with young children, they were bused, taken in trucks, and were taken away. Eventually, we found out they were taken away to extermination camp, to Auschwitz, or to other extermination camps.
Okay.
They were killed.
Okay, so during this time, your father was gone. You guys were in this ghetto.
Correct.
The Yash ghetto?
Yes, Yasha, right.
And how did you survive? Like, how did you survive? Okay, did you buy bread, or did you just have to get
bread
it?
Bread we were able to get. Each whatever, how many people you have in your family, each one got a certain piece, the size, I think it was a quarter of a loaf. Uh-huh. The loaf wasn't that big. I know, an inch, I don't know what, but it was a quarter of a loaf, and that was enough for one, at least that's what they thought.
A day.
For the day.
That's all you would have to eat.
That's all we had, right. And then they gave you some kind of a soup, but soup was made primarily out of nothing. Some one potato out of salt, exactly. And then whatever we were able to accumulate in the ghetto itself, maybe a little garden or something, but very little, but nothing else was available to us.
Okay, hang on 1 second. I want to turn this air conditioning off. Alright, if the air conditioning's too loud, sorry, but there's nothing I can do. it's not that bad. Okay, so go ahead.
So,
where were we?
So my father was taken away. Okay. We tried to survive as much as we possibly could.
They gave you a loaf of bread and some soup.
Some soup, and that's pretty much what we had. Now we were able. People still had money in the ghetto.
Okay.
So we were able to buy. For instance, we were able to buy plums.
How did you still have money?
From before.
So you just had
people had people did have some money. So we were able to buy certain produce from the non-Jewish people, like plums, for instance. We made marmalade or jam.
Yeah.
And
what? I'm trying to think where that move coming from. All right. Yeah, that worked. I knocked it off. Okay, so you had jam.
So we made jam, and then we had bread, so that's what we were able to do. And since we still had...
Would you use that money as bribes, or would you just purchase?
We were purchasing.
Okay.
Right. And unfortunately, people who did not have any money, people were actually handing out to other people.
Okay.
My mother was... People couldn't afford to buy whatever was left over from butter and things like that.
Yeah.
She would still give it to other people who couldn't afford it.
Okay. Yeah, what was the responsibility like for Jews towards other Jews? Because it seems like...
They tried to help each other.
They tried
as much as they possibly could, right?
But was there a sense of like, I'll help you, but I got to look out for my family first, Or was it like we're all in this together?
We're all in this together. I mean, you know, we lived so close, and I was in one, they put us into areas that we lived like in one house, four or five families.
Oh.
It was only good for one family. So pretty much, we were so close together that you pretty much had to take care of each other.
So was it like they sort of forced a camaraderie on you?
In a way, you can say that.
I mean, to share, like, closeness.
Yeah, because, just, you know, some people we knew because they lived, we knew from before. Some people from other neighborhoods that we did not know, we had to share. So,
okay.
And that's what the ghetto.
Did you have any friends back then?
Some, but obviously some Jewish friends, yes, because we didn't have any Christian friends, because Christian boys were always ridiculing us, you know.
Before the war,
yeah, because after that, there's always Jid, you know, which is a
Jid?
Jid, like a dirty Jew or something like that. So that's what we were called, and the Christian boys were always throwing rocks at us. And,
really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, well, it's the Germans started all. Like, the not anti-Semitism was pretty rife throughout that whole area.
Yeah,
throughout all of Europe.
Right. And in school in particular, we were always treated like a third-class citizen.
Really?
Yeah.
So you went to public schools with everybody else?
We went to public school, and we also, the Jewish people, went to what we call the Cheder, which was afternoon school to Jewish studies.
Okay. Wow. Oh, so you went to Jewish with like a rabbi or something?
There was a rabbi, and they're teaching you the alphabet if you were little, and then later on to read and to daven and to things like that.
What did you speak by then, Romanian or Yiddish?
Romanian. And at home, we spoke Yiddish all the time.
Okay.
All the Jewish people, all the Jews spoke Yiddish in their home. And Romanian, obviously.
And that's where you guys learned it? You and Sarah and Safta, that's where you all learned just by daily just talking?
Yiddish?
Yeah.
That's how we grew up. I mean, that was our language. That's what we grew up speaking.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in schools, Romanian.
In school, Romanian. Right.
Okay. Oh, so you're like bilingual, right away.
Yeah, I speak other languages still. At this
that's
point,
a good point. You learn English. Yeah, at this point, you're bilingual.
Right.
Do you speak any Romanian anymore? Do you remember anything?
I do, because I do also speak Italian, and Italian is very close to Romanian.
Oh, really?
So I do speak a lot of it. Do I actually can go out and converse? Probably not.
Could you find the bus station if you were stuck in
the city?
Yes,
I could find the bus station.
Bathroom or bus station.
I would understand what people would say. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I mean, there were no other Jewish kids in the ghetto, like that.
Yeah,
there
were Jewish other Jewish kids.
Could you play? Could you do things like?
But there was nothing to play with. No toys and things like that.
Yeah.
So pretty much everybody kind of stayed to himself and
just didn't do anything.
They couldn't go to school because they didn't allow us to go to school.
So, what did you do for education? Just
well, we tried. There's some people in the ghetto trying to educate us. My mother was actually paying or bribing people. Says, "Okay, we'll give you butter, but you need to educate my kids." If it was an educator or a teacher, and that's and my mother was.
So she'd be like, "You don't have any money, but you can teach them the alphabet for an hour."
Right. So my mother was very, very, very. It was very important to her that we get some education.
Yeah.
And actually, later on, I was the oldest kid in any class because I missed almost 2 years of school.
School completely.
So, yeah.
So then when you had to go back to school, they were like, well, you're not on this level.
Well, right, exactly. I was on this level, and I had to go down.
Was she sort of resilient in the idea? I mean, if the Holocaust was coming to my town, I wouldn't consider my children's future. I would just consider keeping them alive. You know, I mean, obviously she doesn't know how bad it is or how long it's going to be, but was there some sort of like, it seemed almost like that's to make sure you guys are educated seems almost hopeful. We're going to get over this and they're going to need to know how to.
She was hopeful. She was hoping that things would turn out better.
Yeah.
Because at that point, we already heard that people were taken away and sent to Auschwitz to be
and you knew people were just being killed in mass.
Yeah. And when all the men were taken away from Yash to work in the railroad, we knew something was going to happen. Also, in July of 1933, there was about either 3,000 or 5,000 people were put in cattle cars and driven and trying for 3 days nowhere, just going around.
Just a test?
That's just a test. And most of the people, again, died in the cattle.
Just train. To see what the effects would be,
exactly.
Or how long people could take.
Yeah.
No food or anything.
No food, no water.
How many people was that?
I think there was 5,000 people.
Just a whole train full, stuffed in,
and just riding back and forth to nowhere.
Just like cars test their cars by driving cross country and back.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when they came back, obviously most of the people didn't survive. But to get back to the my personal situation. Yeah. So when my father came back, when the war was over in 1945, my father came back, and then we tried to it was under the communist regime. And there wasn't, eventually, first it was okay, but after a while it wasn't anything better. So we tried to leave.
And what do you mean? It was the same anti-Semitism?
Yeah.
Just not killings?
Not killings, correctly.
So I just want to see this scene here. So you're not done with the Holocaust, but the Germans have been defeated.
Right.
You're living in Yassi, just trying to survive or whatever. Yep. And then your dad just walks up one day. Did you know he was coming?
Well, all the people that came back from different places, they came to this DP camp, and then they finally... He found us.
Okay, so that would be, you come to a displaced person camp and you sort of like ask around, are there any other
survivors here? Exactly. People were asking, did you see this one? Did you know if this one survived? Did you know this one? So people says, yeah, they live over there, they live over here. So people were able to, there was lists, posters on a daily basis. People, they came back. So have you ever seen
Empire of the Sun, the movie?
No.
It's about this, it's about a guy who was in Japan, an American, he was in Japan, a kid. He got separated from his family.
Right.
But at the end, there's that displaced persons camp where he just has to be there waiting. And then his parents eventually come look at all the boys. And it's been a few years. They don't remember. And then they remember who it is. Like, oh, there it is. And it's sort of reuniting.
Yeah. Well, I did not see that movie, but it's pretty much what it was, very close to what it was.
And were there scenes like all the time there of people like...
Yeah, people came back
joyously
from different
reuniting
places.
Or I guess sadly, like not reuniting.
Some of the people who ran away originally came back, and they found some of their families, some did not. So then they found out more and more who was taken away completely to be put to death, to be gassed, and who would eventually come back. But not
was your father's family? How were they?
My father's family, most of them were killed because they were still in Hungary.
Okay.
My mother came from a family of 13 children. Four survived. Two went to Palestine at that time.
Uh-huh.
Two were in concentration camp.
They survived by going there?
So before the war.
Okay.
They went to there.
There was a big immigration there in 33, right?
Yeah.
33, 35?
Yeah, the Zionist movement.
Okay.
And two of my mother's brothers, one is his name is Lazer, and one Moshe, they were sent to Auschwitz.
Okay.
And the father. All the other sisters, they had young children, they were automatically went to gas chambers and never survived. So the two uncles and my grandfather had working camps in Auschwitz. Okay. Not only death camps, but they also had sub camps, which was slave camp labor.
Just to get work done until the extermination?
Exactly.
Okay.
So my grandfather eventually died from starvation, and my two uncles, which was two out of the 13, survived the war. When they were liberated by the Americans, they were so weak, they were taken to Sweden.
Okay.
And one of the uncles, in the boat to Sweden after the liberation, he died because he just was too sick.
Too weak.
So one of my only uncle that survived from Auschwitz did come back eventually, and he lives in Florida right now.
Lazer.
Yeah, Lazer.
And how do they find him? Because again, there's no way of
communicating.
No way he moved to America. They went to America.
He survived, and he went. They took him to Sweden to a sanatorium.
Okay.
And from Sweden, they were able to choose where they want to go.
What's a sanatorium?
Sanatorium is a place for sick
it's
people.
Psychiatric.
It's not psychiatric, but people with lung disease, with people that needed a lot of treatment.
Okay.
So people to be able to kind of put them back into normal life. So. So from there, he chose to go to America.
Okay.
Although he did not know at that time if my mother survived, if any of his people survived, he did not know.
Out of 13, nine had been killed and four were alive.
Four survived, but he didn't correct.
And then three after Moshe died.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
And then when he went to America, somehow he got it. So I don't know how exactly it happened, but he found my mother in Romania, and we were able to somehow let us were coming through that he survived, and nobody else did. And that's the only time we knew that he's the only survivor from all his brothers and
sisters. How long after they had been separated did they find him again?
I would have to say this probably must have been 1946, 47, 46.
Okay.
Probably a year later.
That's when he found
us. Yeah.
Okay.
That he found out. And so that was
it's okay, it's just a lightsaber.
So that was one thing. Then we tried to get out of Romania.
Okay.
And we couldn't.
Why couldn't you get out of Romania?
There's no permits to be able to allow the communists
the
communists didn't allow it to leave. So finally my father was able to bribe different officials and we left.
Had he started up business again, or what did he
no,
do in those
he
years
did.
After
he
that?
Worked. He actually worked. He was able. He knew a lot of people in different places that he dealt with in the cattle business and the feed business. So he knew a lot of people. So he actually got a job with the communist regime to buy food for the Russian army.
Okay.
And so he was traveling, you know, by train to different places.
To make contacts
to different cities and buy apples or whatever the Russian army needed. So he was able to meet a lot of Russian officers. So he finally was able to bribe the right official to get a permit to leave.
Okay.
And what happened is that after he paid them off, I don't remember how much he paid them off, we were allowed to leave from Romania to go to, at that point was Palestine, 1949, which was Israel right now. So we packed up whatever we had, and primarily
49 was still Palestine?
49 was, yeah. Okay. And 49 was Palestina, they used to call it, but 48 was when they started
the pens.
Right. So after my father, whatever we had people, all the wealth was in pillows and blankets and things like that. People didn't have any wealth at that point anymore. So I remember my father had a big box, like a trunk built to put all these things to be able to take. So we left Iași to Constanța, which was the port city of Romania, to be able to take a boat to Israel, to Palestine at that point.
Would you go to Tel Aviv?
No, at that point. So anyway, we came to Constanța. And they disapproved the permit.
Oh, no.
Something, a problem. So we were at least 3 to 4 weeks in Constanța, but not knowing what's going on.
Where did you even stay there?
In some camps and things like other Jewish people. There's other more people like that. So finally, we were able to leave. We left in a ship called Transylvania, which was a cargo ship. And there was obviously holes, you know, for grain or for things.
Holes? What do you mean?
You know, the people where you keep grain when you ship products from one country to the other. What is it called?
It's a cargo hull.
Yeah.
Oh, hull. Yeah.
Hull,
okay.
Right. And that's what there were two. One were for man, one for a woman.
They separated.
Separated. And then at night we were able to get up on top and we're meeting. I was able to see my mother and my sisters and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, but that's what it took us. It took us about a couple of weeks to get from
Romania. Weeks?
Yeah.
To get from Romania to Israel?
Yeah, which normally takes about a day and a half now.
Yeah. Or even on a plane, it's like 6 hours.
So we came to Haifa.
Yeah.
And then from Haifa, we were put into a absorption camps.
Okay.
And close to Haifa, which was called Atlit at that point. And then before that, my mother already had contact with her brother and sister who left before the war to Israel. So they were over there.
Who's that?
That's Simcha and Rochel, Tante Rochel and Uncle Simcha.
Oh, okay.
So we were making contact, and then I remember one time we were there maybe for a week and a half, and my mother or my father said to me, Nachum, take your two sisters, go to Netanya. They live in Netanya.
Uh-huh.
Take them to visit.
Yeah.
I didn't speak a word in Hebrew.
Yeah.
The only thing I spoke is Yiddish.
Yeah.
And a few pennies that my father, that were given to us from this, it's called the, I forgot the name of that organization it's called. And then I took my two sisters, although my older sister was older, but I was the man of the group. And we finally got it. We finally made it.
To Netanya.
To Netanya.
To visit
right.
them.
Yeah. Oh. And then my father and my mother came.
How did your father stay safe ish, say fish, on the railroads and in the camp.
He was strong. My father was a strong man. He was strong, and he had a very hard, he had a very, a will to live.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's got to be luck, too, just not catching a cold or not,
yeah.
I mean.
People gave up, and people were sick, obviously, and he was, there's nothing to, no medication to take care of, but whatever he did, he was strong before, he was a strong man, and that's how he survived.
Wow.
Obviously, he was not the way when he left. He was not the same way. But
How was he liberated, and how were you liberated?
We were liberated by the Russians. I remember the day they were liberated. It was, like I mentioned earlier, it was May 24, 1945.
Yeah.
There was a lot of bombardment 2 days before.
From the Russians?
From the Russians, bombarding the German locations. And all of a sudden, one day, that day, was quiet. We were in bunkers in the field. They dug up ditches, and that's where we were hiding. And all of a sudden, it was quiet. We didn't know what's going to happen. And there was a little area that you can see through from the bottom of the ditch to the top, which was covered with branches and things like that. So all of a sudden, we saw people with red stars on their helmets.
Oh.
And then we figured out that these are the Russians, right?
And the Germans were gone?
They had retreated. Right.
Wow. And your father, how was he liberated?
Same thing by the Russians. He was on the Russian front.
He was liberated from the railroads?
From the railroads, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Germans just abandoned their slaves?
Yeah, they all ran. I mean, they were liberated, caught, and they were taken prisoners of war. Some of them were shot by the Russians, because the Russians, after they found out what the Germans did to a lot of people, it wasn't only Jewish people. They did to gypsies, to black people.
Yeah, they did.
To anybody was different than they are. They did that too.
Yeah.
So what they did, they just shot them. You know,
the
Russians took out a lot of Germans instead of taking them as prisoners of war. They just shot them on the spot.
How do you feel about Germans now?
It's a new generation. It's a new generation. Do I feel bad about the new generation?
I mean, you have a sister that lived there for a long time.
Yes, I do. They lived there because that was when they came back from concentration camp. My brother-in-law came from concentration camp back. That was the only way to stay and live and survive. So they did some business. They did all kinds of businesses. And they stayed. And then my brother-in-law finally married my sister. And he moved back to Germany. He moved back to Munich.
I know when I bring it up, if there's a German person in the audience and I'm on stage, and I'll make a joke about the Holocaust or something, they get more uncomfortable than anyone. Because I think it's such an, I think from what I've seen, it's such an embarrassing time for them. Like, if you're 30 right now, 35, in German, you weren't alive during the Holocaust.
Correct.
But you have this history that's so close that your people were a part of. You know, I mean, their people were a part of. So they're just embarrassed. Just totally embarrassed about what had happened.
At this point, they probably are. Way back in 46, 47, the German government had a law. You cannot say anything about Jews. So if somebody was saying anything about a Jew, immediately any German civilian would be arrested.
So any politician.
Any politician.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
So how do I feel now? To be honest with you, at this point, the new generation, I don't have any animosity about the new generation.
I think a lot of times people hold grudges against, like, an organization or like a country, but it's really just the regime, just the Nazi
regime. Exactly.
So people who are born there now, live there now, they have nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
So just because they share the same name.
Well, maybe their parents were sympathetic, maybe their grandparents. Parents probably may not have been, but they probably had a closed eye to what's going on. They didn't do anything about it to stop it.
No.
Few did. Some people did hide other Jewish people. Very few did, because they took their lives in their own hands. Because what happens is that if the Germans find out that any non-Jewish people were hiding Jewish people, they had the same fate as Jewish people were.
So they were both no tolerance.
No tolerance.
And some people did anyway?
Yes.
Because they were like, this is just wrong?
It was wrong.
They can't let their neighbors
Exactly.
But there was so much anti-Semitism there already, probably a lot of people already wouldn't have helped.
Yeah, but in the same token, in the small towns, people did have some kind of relationship that wasn't so bad. That wasn't so bad with the Jewish people.
Yeah.
And after a while, you know, when they confiscated my father's property, Christian people came and took over and did things.
And there was no, after the war, there was no getting that back.
No.
There was no, like, well, that's my stuff. That was confiscated before the war even came, really.
Right. Actually, recently there's an organization came up. I'll show you maybe later on. I'll give you the name. I did apply to see for things that were confiscated by the Germans before there was nothing in Romania.
Uh-huh.
So I did apply, and I have not received any information.
To see what
yet.
They confiscated.
What confiscated? Yeah, I told them exactly what the property was and where it was and the name of my parents.
Yeah.
So we'll see what.
It's hard to get money back. Like Michael, my brother, your son, worked in. Right. What was his organization that
it's
he worked in?
It's the. CRT.
It was in Zurich, but it was
claims resolution tribunal. Yeah. But primarily for the
Swiss banks
people.
Who just took the money of people, and so then they were like, they had a big $1 billion settlement. We're like, okay, we owe this money.
Well, the Germans at that point were supposed to have been neutral, but they weren't. They took
the Swiss. Yeah.
They took all the money, all the gold, what the Germans robbed the Jewish people from Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia.
They
deposited there, and they didn't ask any questions. All the art that was taken away, they never asked for any.
They're just like, okay, well,
fine, right? Yeah.
Wow. Man, what a time. What was your feeling like during those periods where you're in the ghetto? Like, as a 7 or 10 year old kid.
It was pretty tough. You know, you had to do certain things. A lot of hard work, literally, labor, physical labor. You had to do.
Yeah.
And when I was 8 or 9 at that point, I pretty much was the man of the house.
Were you longing for, like, I wish it wasn't like this? I wish I could be like those Christian kids?
Of course, but, you know, the problem was this was our fate. This was the reality, and we couldn't do anything about it.
I heard this rapper named Coolio talking to Jon Stewart once, and Jon Stewart was making a joke about how his life was so much easier than Coolio's because he didn't have to worry about drive-bys.
Right.
He was like, you know, for me, the bully would take my lunch money. That was the worst that could happen to me. And Coolio's point was, but that's all you knew, and me having to worry about drive-by shootings was all I knew. So it was the same thing. We play like you play, and then I just have to worry about this, and you'd have to worry about your TV show not coming on.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like it was like that at all.
No, it was not
like
at all.
Like, you could see this is a problem.
Yeah. And then even later on, when the communist regime came, we went back to school, the Jewish people were treated like third-grade citizens again. Even though my younger sister and myself were pretty good students.
Uh-huh.
And my younger sister was number one in class, and I was second in class. And the Russians, or the regime, had a young organization called Pioneers, in which they got a red scarf.
Uh-huh.
And Jewish people were never allowed. And only
it was an academic organization?
Academic, right. Only the good students became pioneers with a red scarf, and they were able to. So
they had parties and stuff,
right? And the Jewish
and you weren't
people,
allowed.
We were never allowed.
No, just because it was so bad.
We were Jewish, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's no threat of death after the Holocaust, but there was no threat of like.
There was no threat of death, but.
But it was still terrible.
It was still terrible. Yeah.
So your mom, your dad was like, "Let's just get out of here."
Yeah. And took a while to finally we made it back to made it
Romania.
Away from Romania to Israel.
Wow. Okay. But and now you work at the Holocaust, or you volunteer?
Yeah, I volunteer at the Holocaust Museum. I've been there for about a year and a half now. And I take children from different schools. I explain to the children what happened. Tell them my story as a survivor. How we survived. What happened. And I try to teach them to make sure that things like this don't happen again. To tell their friends.
There's a saying they have that a lot of people don't know, just never forget.
Right, it's called Zahor, don't forget. And we have these insignias.
There's nothing you can do about it, but just make sure people remember.
Don't forget, right. So,
what happened again.
In these schools, you know, a lot of many non-Jewish schools come, and a lot of kids cry when I tell them the story of what happened to us. And some of the kids are 2 years older than I was. I can't imagine that I could have done what you did 2 years younger than me.
Some 10-year-old, some 9-year-old kid who's like, yeah, you were younger than him. And I can't imagine it now. I'm 37.
It's very hard. And they're trying to educate. And unfortunately, the ones who were in concentration camps, in Auschwitz, Buchenwald, Dachau, all these places, these people are in the 80s.
Yeah.
85, 86. Yeah. They're dying out.
Yeah.
I'm the younger generation. I'm 75.
Yeah.
So at this point,
you're a healthy 75 too.
I'm sorry?
You're a healthy 75.
Thank God for that. Yeah. But a lot of people, you know, they're dying out. And eventually there's not going to be any survivors. So we need to tell the story to other people to make sure that this thing is not forgotten. Yeah. And you know what? Today, we see the same thing in Rwanda. We see the same thing going on in different parts of the world. And we need to tell people to wake up. Things does happen like that, and it's not the right thing. It's very inhumane.
Yeah.
And we should do something about it. Nothing was done in World War II.
I feel like a lot of people, let's just say Rwanda or something like that, it's a very similar situation.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just like, well, it's not my problem, I don't know that. But that's the same situation. It's not my problem. You can easily say it's not my problem.
Yeah, it should be that.
It's other humans.
Yeah.
Man, for the longest time, you didn't really talk about the Holocaust at all. I didn't talk about it.
I think the thing that was opened up to us was when Spielberg opened up the things for the Holocaust, people to record things like that, and that's when people started to talk about
it. Spielberg helped build that Holocaust memorial?
Tremendous. Spielberg actually had a tremendous amount. I have tapes here that he taped from different people. Different people had interviews with Steven Spielberg's group, and now it's part of the Holocaust Memorial Museum archives.
At the end of Schindler's List, they had an interview with the real people.
Yeah. And you know, we had, for instance, I gave all my pictures when I was young that we had somehow that we were able to save.
Yeah.
I gave it to the Holocaust Museum, and it was recorded.
Really?
There was one Megillah which we read on Purim.
Okay, Megillah is like a scroll. Yeah.
And my father read it, and before we took him away, he hid it in a cellar. And when he came back, he took it out, and actually it's not a kosher Megillah that you can read from. So finally I got it, and I figured the only way to really make sure it survives and people will be able to see it in generations to come is to give it to a museum. So it's now in the museum.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Your grandfather's Purim Megillah?
My grandfather's, and my father used it, and then,
Wow. The story of Esther and...
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's in
the museum right now.
Really?
And all the pictures...
Yeah, when that museum is open, I might be wrong, because memory doesn't always serve me, but I feel like you were like, I don't have to go to that. I remember how I remember. And it's not going to be... Like, it didn't seem like you went for a while.
No, because you didn't... The feeling was bad memories.
Yeah. Like, so, why revisit it?
Right. And then my sisters and I decided... Should we go back to Romania to see what the old town? My older sister went back. I did not because my memories were so bad. They were so terrible that I didn't want to relive that again.
You couldn't even play. There must have been no good memory. If you just
no sit, good memories at all.
Just bad hopefully
memories.
There's nothing bad today.
Right.
God.
So anyway.
So for a while you didn't want to go.
Didn't want to go. But then I realized that if I volunteer, if I go and teach other children, and if maybe 10% or maybe 1% of the kids will remember what they heard from me and they pass it on, and eventually, like, you see all these things that's going on in the world today, like Ahmadinejad, they're denying the Holocaust.
Uh-huh.
You know, and people, some people, many places of the United States, believe that this never happened. Well, it did happen. I was there.
Yeah.
So I know. But, you know, after I'm gone, after these people that were actually in Auschwitz are gone, who's going to tell the story?
Yeah.
So the Holocaust Museum is part of that story.
And there's
story.
So few survivors anyway. When you're down the railroad, you're saying 9 out of 10 people died. One out of 10 survived just that. And then they might have died 20 years later in a car accident. Yeah. I mean, the amount of people that are still around, it must
and
be minute.
They weren't very healthy.
Oh, that's another cool point. For 3 to 5 years, you had the worst nutrition of your life.
Right.
Wasn't even eating pizza every day. It was eating nothing every day.
Right.
Man. Wow. So you help with the volunteering.
I
still haven't been to this. I should go. I'll go over the weekend. But I went to Yad Vashem a few times when I was in Yerushalayim.
Okay, that's great. And they have now a lot of
you've been there?
Yeah. Okay. A lot of Holocaust museums in different parts of the world. Even Berlin, they have a Holocaust museum. There's different parts in Europe. Have different museums strictly to honor these Holocaust survivors.
I was in Boston. There used to be a club called the Comedy Connection. It's closed now.
Uh-huh.
And at the hotel across the street at Faneuil Hall, where all the tourists go, behind the hotel, I stayed there 3 times and know this, and me and my friend Tate walked around one day. And behind the hotel, there's all this like open air markets, and people come on Sundays. But there's also this, I guess, a memorial set up for the concentration camps, and it's just these glass chambers You can walk through them, and each one is a different, seven concentration camps?
Yeah.
Each one is different. And then they have these small names written for everybody that was that died, and it goes up five stories.
Okay.
Just if each giant glass panel, just full of just names.
You'll be surprised when, if you're going to visit the Holocaust Museum, you'll see different towns in Europe, and all over the place, different cities, different countries, the population that was originally before the war, the population after the war.
Jewish population?
Jewish population.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised from a town from 90,000 people, 3,000 survived.
From 150,000 people,
5,000 survived. It's just unbelievable the amount of people that were killed by starvation, shot, forced marches, things like that, like I mentioned to you with the train things, for no reason.
Yeah.
Just put in a train and just to go. And you think about it.
It's hard to put in numbers to wrap your head around it.
Right.
It's really hard to wrap your head around it.
Yeah, it is hard. And the Germans, supposed to be they're intelligent people. How they could think about doing things like that was just unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche, is a philosopher, and he wrote about it because he sort of saw The Birth of Tragedy, one of the books, I forget which one it was, but he said he saw the impending anti-Semitism coming, and this was in the early 30s, I think, and he said that this is going to be a problem because Jews were the academics.
Right.
He goes, if we lose their thoughts that are coming into academia, because that's a major loss for all of us. But I guess you get swept up with...
Well, look at one person that survived, that actually left before the war, Einstein.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine if Einstein was still in Germany?
Was he Jewish?
Absolutely.
No.
So the German would have that atom bomb, you know, and they would destroy the entire world.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they tried to do.
Yeah.
Just to give you one thing which I think is a good thing to remember, when they build the railroads, when my father built the railroads, the international width of the railroad track, I'm not sure exactly what the width is, I think it's 36 inches or 48 or 42 inches. The Russian railroad is 4 inches wider.
Okay.
So when the Germans came in, they couldn't use it because they had to unload the railroad cars and to put them back in. So they never thought about it that they wouldn't be able to get all the way through to Moscow. Different width of the tracks.
Yeah.
So the Germans,
and their cars were built differently.
Built differently, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's one good thing.
Okay.
But things weren't so good. You know, I still remember many times when I think about it and I cry sometimes, you know, but it's tough. You know,
it's like you could see it from a large point of view, you could see seven big towers, and you could see an individual tower, one camp. And then you can see this individual pane, and the pane of glass was as big as a bookcase is.
Right.
And then you're like, that's just one pane of glass, and you narrow it, your vision, to one name. And then you look back at these seven giant glass towers, and you're like, oh my God.
How many people, yeah.
Did you ever hate, I know this is an experience, did you ever hate God?
No, there was two kinds of people. Some people decided they don't want to be religious anymore.
Yeah.
Some keep their faith. We kept our faith. I don't know why. I don't know if there was something instilled in us.
Yeah.
But some people did lose their faith. Some did not.
Some people get stronger.
Some people got stronger, or at least they kept the faith.
Okay. How would he let this happen?
We thought about it afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Philosophy wise, you know, it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain why that thing happened. It's hard to explain why God let these things happen.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so that's why some people lost their faith.
I remember my rabbis told me when in Israel, when you're trying to explain the reason for kashrus or anything else, like why a pig's not kosher.
Right.
Is it because of tapeworms and it was healthy? And I'm like, no, the reason is because God says.
No.
There's no reason. You don't always get reasons why.
Exactly.
It just is.
Yeah. So we kept off it because, you know, my family comes from a very, very Orthodox family, people with beards and rabbis and shochtim, which was a shochet, was a guy that actually killed chickens, you know. But you know,
that was a job, a shochet?
That was a job, yeah. Okay. It was a very pious person who would do that. So we come from pious Rabbayim and things like that. So I guess maybe that was some influence mm-hmm. that we kept.
And your father never swayed at all?
No.
Didn't seem like it did.
My father, I think anybody from our family did sway at all.
No matter how much. Seems soft, though. I knew a lot more because I knew longer and she didn't ever.
Right. And no matter what happened, I mean, they always kept the faith. They always stayed religious. In the Torah, it's the same way. So, to stay that way.
I remember Safta being so conservative, even despite all that. Right. I remember when I was there and I shaved my head on a dare. I was like, maybe I'll shave my head. And my friend was like, I'll do it right now. I have razors. Let's go. So I shaved my head with an electric razor. And I remember waiting 2 weeks to see her because I knew she was going to be upset. And then after 2 weeks, I went from Jerusalem to Petah Tikva to visit.
Right.
And she said, I don't know if I told you, I think I did, but she goes, you know, I watch the news and I see these murderers and these rapists on television. And I could say, at least my grandson isn't one of those people. But now I can't say it anymore. Well, I was like, Safta, I shaved my head.
Well, they had the different
yeshiva. I relaxed.
Different values. You know, shaving your hair, you know, I don't know. That's, you know, in a way, I was kind of rebellious to myself personally. Yeah. But, you know, that comes with age. And then my mother, eventually, I think she was quite modern. You know, she accepted a lot of things. You know, but a lot of people were very...
She got by in English, too. She got by.
She got by.
Yeah, I was always surprised. Nobody taught her English. But she would have even been exposed to English. She would have been way into her adult life. I was going to talk to you about the war and moving here and all that. Not the war. I mean, fighting in the army and moving here. But that's already long enough. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it next time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so if whoever...
Hopefully people listen to this and just sort of understand how bad it was. I'm starting to tear up a little bit because it's just such a horrible experience.
Listen, if you can move a couple of people from this interview, that'd be great. You know, that'd be great. And we always remember that you're tearing and I'm tearing. You know, so it's very hard not to think that we went through and
I have trouble. I used to have trouble hooking a worm for fishing. Because I'd see this living worm, and I'd be like, I don't want to kill it. But to do it to another human. That's actually my Rav Ryan told me not to use the word shiksa.
Shiksa.
For non-Jews. Uh-huh. Because that's how, to me, it's one of the most racist terms of all time. Because it's not even like, if you have the N-word for blacks, or anyone else, even kike for Jews, whatever it is, it just... discusses one type of race, but shiksa is everyone else except for Jews is on a lower level. But he said not to use that word because it comes from shekes, which is like a maggot or a worm.
Right.
And he goes, you don't talk about God's creatures like that. Right. You don't try to put them in a lower category. Yeah. Because we're all human. Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, also once I volunteered, I'm more aware of things.
Did you open up more about it?
Absolutely.
Like, what do you mean?
I see more things going on. I'm more tolerable to other people, which maybe I wasn't before. So, you know, my tolerance...
Seems like you relaxed a little bit, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, we were discussing stuff like... I mean, I know you're from an old-school background. And when there's things like when Rav Bieler came into to the shul and started saying that women can give the speech, the Dvar Torah, the words of wisdom, whatever you would say.
Yeah.
And you were like, no, they can't.
Right.
And even though they were on their side of the mechitza, on a different side, but now you're like, whatever, who cares?
Right, exactly.
I'm done fighting.
Tolerant, you know, something, in the end of the day, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
It does make a difference, you know?
Yeah, that's what I try to do now, in just in anything. I'm like, what difference does it make?
Right.
What are you fighting for? Does it matter?
So minute thing, so...
I let everything go now. People cut me off in traffic. I'm like, all right, you're in a rush, I guess. Okay, I'm not, so go ahead. Right. Well, I'm not going to fight you over this. Yeah. I'm going to forget it in 4 minutes.
Right, exactly right. And, you know, certain things you should forget, certain things you should remember. Certain things you should remember. And I hope that we always remember what happened
during the Holocaust. So do you see stuff like Rwanda or other countries that things like this are happening?
Absolutely.
I mean, Syria, where they're just massacring their own
Mexican,
people.
And Tripoli, the whole thing. You know, the Holocaust Museum is education. They do education for all these countries to make sure people educated. You know, the strength of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, right.
People,
you know, people tell lies, you know, like Gaddafi. He tells his people one thing, and what's happening on the ground is completely different.
Yeah, Ahmadinejad, same thing.
Exactly.
There's not a single gay Iranian. Yeah. The Holocaust never happened.
Yeah, it never happened, right. And I tell you, when it comes to the Holocaust, you know, I told you, it's not only Jews. It's Jews, gypsies, homosexuals.
Blacks.
People that wore glasses.
People that wore glasses?
Glasses.
That were glasses? Different.
Absolutely.
Why? That just wasn't an Aryan.
It wasn't an Aryan. Right?
Your eyesight went?
Right. So then people were differently than they are. I mean, there were so many things. You can see it in the museum's library. People that were persecuted because they were different. And for no reason. For no reason.
Other than just different. And we
different,
have to get rid of differences.
Right. And forget, you know, what they called, they used to call them crippled, you know, people who were handicapped.
Yeah.
They were crippled, they were no use for anything, so
done.
Persecuted, taken away, shot, put them into major areas and shot and covered with dirt. I mean, it's
sort of amazing to me that someone who went through that, and those times were different, I mean, those were in a ghetto with very little electricity and very little, I mean, there wasn't much to... There was no mail, definitely no emails or movies or anything.
Nothing.
It's like how people that were alive then, in a short time, like time frame that most humans live,
right?
How you're still alive in at times like these. Do you ever look at it and see, like, it's kind of amazing how far...
Yeah, it probably is. It probably is. Because, again...
I know it happens slowly over time.
Yeah. But, you know, the will to live way back... That's continuation,
that's what it is,
you know. You have pain a little bit here and there. You live with it, you know, like the will to live. You want to continue living. So I'm not gonna not pick up my grandchildren because my back hits a little bit.
Yeah,
you live with it.
I know when Obama was talking about going into Libya and going into you know, Syria and all these different places where there's really wrongs going on to humans.
Yeah.
You know, not just like, oh, this guy's in charge, but he shouldn't be in charge. He taxes people too much. It's like they're killing people.
They're killing people, sure.
And he's like, I know it might not be the most economically sound idea to go in, but he's like, we got to go in.
Absolutely.
Because we're supposed to be the nation that's supposed to show other nations what to do.
Yeah.
We can't, I sort of like it. I get it. I know we can't afford this, but it's like, you got to go and stop these things.
And don't forget, in the Second World War, you know, the Americans didn't think there was a ship that actually left Germany.
Yeah.
And the Americans didn't
let them. But a lot of people don't know about that. What is that?
There was a ship. There were people that were let go.
Yeah. And from Germany.
From Germany.
Jews.
And they were going to different parts. Europe didn't want them. So they finally
ship of refugees.
Refugees. They finally sailed to the United States.
So they went to like England or they went to France, and France like, no,
Italy,
not coming to our port.
No, they're not coming to port. So they finally...
Like an illegal immigrant. Pretty much, they're like, your visa's not
exactly
accepted.
You're not accepted here.
And they couldn't go back to Germany because that's
correct.
That's death.
But eventually, that's what happened
because no one would take them.
No one would take American refused entry.
And they said, if we go back, we'll be killed.
And they were.
And they were, and they were killed.
Yeah,
I remember that boat. I forgot what it was called.
I forgot the name of it too. But you see, that's what happened. So today, we need to remember these things, what happened then, and things could happen today, too.
Japanese
and it's
people
happening.
Were put in concentration camps in America,
the United
and
States.
They never taught us that.
Right.
In school,
right.
They skipped over that.
Yeah.
Because it's such an embarrassing, like, we don't know which one's which, we're going to put you on. But they don't put, like, German-looking people.
Right.
They don't put anyone named Kraut in a concentration camp. So, I guess you got to correct those things.
Yeah.
I think that's what you get from remembering the really horrors of the Holocaust, is, like, well, you can see similar things going on now
in the world,
and you have to stop it.
Yeah,
if you do what you can to stop it,
and you have to speak up. You have to speak up.
Yeah, just voice your opinion. If that's
absolutely.
All you that's good enough. That's
And at this point, you know, I do go to schools and lecture, and I do speak to groups.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's a big
important.
Change.
Yeah.
I know for when I was at Maryland, at University of Maryland, I put for what's the Holocaust Memorial Day?
Yom HaShoah?
Yom HaShoah, yeah. Is there another one, too?
That's Yom Yerushalayim and Yom HaShoah.
Yeah. I think it was Yom HaShoah. And I put a Yudin armband on.
Uh-huh.
I just walked around with it. You could see, you're like, what is that? Why?
People don't know.
I'm like, we all had to wear these for a while.
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Just to be marked.
Yeah. People wearing the yellow star on
the yellow star on your chest. You just pin it on your chest.
God forbid if you forgot it or you didn't pin it and you were outside.
How'd you get them? Did you make them yourself?
You have to make them.
You have to make them.
They gave you certain material, yellow material, and they gave you, some of them they gave, because it was written Yude on it.
Yeah.
And then in French was different, jus or, you know, different things. Also, they had different color stars for different. For Jews, they had the yellow star.
Yeah.
For criminals, yeah. They had a black star.
No.
For gypsies, they have a different things.
For, you know, for gays, I heard for gays they had a triangle.
The triangle also
there triangle was or rainbow
the
blacks.
Not the blacks. Jehovah Witnesses.
Jehovah Witnesses.
And they have a big memorial in Jehovah Witnesses in the museum.
Really?
And they but they had the star with the purple thing. And they have a big area.
And they were killed too?
Absolutely.
Why Jehovah's Witnesses?
I don't know, because again, it was
not just Christian. That's just different type.
Different
type.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. Whenever I see Christians fighting, like Protestants and Lutherans, I'm like, don't you guys all just hate Jews?
Right. I don't get Jehovah's Witnesses.
You worship Jesus and hate Jews. It's all fine. We'll learn to love each other.
Yeah. But the Jehovah's Witnesses were persecuted as well.
Man.
And there was a big exhibit in the Holocaust Museum
for that.
Jehovah's Witnesses, yeah.
Yeah, I gotta go. Maybe I'll get up and lunch one day, see how close it is to my hotel. Okay. Go over there. Is it open on Shabbos?
Yeah, there's only 2 days it's closed.
What is it?
Christmas Day and Yom Kippur.
Oh, really?
Only 2 days the Holocaust Museum is closed. But all the other days it's
open for people to see.
It's very worth seeing. You know, it's really
okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay, my gosh. Maybe next time I visit, we can talk about the Israeli Israel. Army and stuff like that.
Thank you, Ari. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you very much. That's it, everybody. Skeptic Tank number, whatever it is, 22 or 21.